podcast where we tackle some of the most common and the most challenging issues facing preschool-age children and their families. Reporting from Discovery Child Development Center is your host, Mike DeLotte.
Hi, and welcome to episode 35 of Preschool and Beyond, Speech and Language Development. Preschool years are a time of rapid growth in language and speech development. It can be hard, however, for a parent to measure if their child is making the expected progress in these areas. Today we'll look at what developmental milestones for speech and language are typical during the preschool years, common challenges, and when parents may want to think about getting a speech evaluation. Joining us is Jill Odell. Jill is a language and speech-language pathologist and feeding specialist at Holly Springs Feeding and Speech. Jill has over 14 years of experience and holds a master's level degree in speech-language pathology, as well as a certificate of clinical competence from the American Speech, Language, and Hearing Association. Thanks so much for joining us today, Jill.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start off talking about some of the terms we're going to use today. So
sure.
I think sometimes people will kind of lump speech and language together, but they're actually two different things. So could you kind of distinguish for us what is speech and what is language?
Absolutely. So speech encompasses the physical act of speaking. So how you're moving your sounds, how you're moving your mouth to produce sounds, whether you're intelligible, so if you can be understood by another speaker just physically saying words. And that kind of encompasses speech. It also can encompass what we call syntax, so how you're putting words together to make complete sentences. Language is kind of a larger component. So language encompasses both receptive language, so how children understand language, expressive language, so how they're what they're saying, what's coming out. And then, you know, another part of that is kind of, and especially in the preschool stage, this becomes important, is social pragmatic language. So how are we using our language with peers, with other adults? How is our communication intent? And so that's what, that really encompasses what language is about.
Right. So sort of like language is having the words and speech is actually how they come out.
Is that about basically. And kind of speech is more, I call it like more the physical act of talking, whereas language is what's in my head and how am I getting it out and using it and can I understand what people are saying.
Okay. So I think it can be kind of challenging for a parent to know. It's not something like height that we can check.
Yes.
You know, he's 36 inches at this age. And I think parents a lot of times, you know, is he talking late? Shouldn't he be saying more words now? Why is he stuttering? Is that normal? So can you kind of go through, I know there are a lot of different milestones, but some of the big ones kids will hit during the preschool years?
Absolutely. So I think the first thing I will say is that to all families out there when listening, if you have concerns, and you're thinking about milestones and you want to look up what I call Dr. Google, be very careful because lots of different websites will have lots of different information regarding where your child's language production will be. So if I was not a speech therapist and I was just going to Google how many words should a two-year-old say, I can click on five different websites and they're going to have five different numbers or ideas of how many words they should have. If we were looking at kind of the preschool age and maybe like, 18 months going into the preschool stage, an 18-month-old could have anywhere between 5 to 25 words. That's a big range because they should be just now kind of starting to get their words, starting to talk, wanting to imitate, and being very curious about language. So that 18 to 2, to right at that 2-year level, you should start to see an increase in single word development. Mm-hmm. So then at the age of 2, so right around the age of 2, I would expect a child to have a pretty large single word vocabulary. So they should be imitating words and they should be labeling words. That could be words that they see in the community. So you're driving in the car and they're like, tree, fire truck, things like that. So we should definitely start seeing that at 2. And also, like if you're reading a book, you're like, show me the cow. And you would expect a 2-year at this point to be able to point those things out and label that to you. The thing that you want to see toward the 2 to 2.5 stage is that they're putting two words together. Mm-hmm. So, mommy more, or, I want milk, or, no, please. So definitely starting to take that vocabulary and combine it and using a little more intent. When they get to the 3-year-old stage, we really should start to see some more advanced sentence development. Mm-hmm. Not super advanced, but definitely answering some questions like, are you hungry? What do you need? Naming a lot more pictures and stating action. So, I ran the slide, I ran up the slide. Or so starting to talk about very in the moment things that they're doing and using those words. By 4 to 5, we expect I would expect a much more advanced vocabulary, putting 4 to 5 words together, and really starting to pick up things within their environment. So imitating what parents are saying and try to using that in conversation. I would definitely expect that more around the 4.5 to 5 year old level.
So how much of a role do parents play in language and, I guess, to some extent, speech development? Like, what, how much of it, if you're going to see issues later, are, you know, just sort of a natural thing, and how much of a role do parents have in shaping their development?
So I think that they have a huge role in that, you know, there's language that they're going to get in school. So let's say they are in a daycare, you know, obviously there's going to be language development you see at school. But if, you know, prior to that being at home, their language and what they're learning is very solely based on parental involvement and what they're saying. And when, you know, when we get into, you know, how do you know that there's a concern that they're not talking? One of the things I always look at is, what is the environment right now? So how much are people actually talking to the child? How much language are they exposed to? You know, are they just sitting using electronics and watching TV? Or are they having people use spoken communication? How much modeling are they doing too? So for a 2-year-old, you are going to use shorter, simple sentences because you want them to be able to try to imitate that.
Yeah.
And so that really plays a key part in how much children can pick up. Because if they're not getting enough, or if it's almost too much, kids are going to tune that out.
Yeah.
And so we want to be really trying to model appropriate language at their level so that they can pick up on that and try to imitate it.
How much benefit, is there any benefit if, let's say someone says, well, you know, I'm busy, I can't communicate a lot, but they hear a lot of language on TV. Can you gain much, or?
So here's the thing, and I always say I'm a speech language pathologist and a feeding therapist and a hypocrite at my house, because, you know, it's very hard. Like, technology is playing a really huge part in your language and what kids are using and playing with. It's not like when we were growing up where, you know, there were no iPhones,
yeah.
You know, there was no cell phones, there's no iPads, and that's a big part of what we're doing, and kids do get very involved with that. I don't think that there's anything wrong with the screen time or, you know, using those apps, but the thing you have to remember is there's no speech and communication, there's turn-taking, and there's back and forth. So I talk to you, then you talk to me, and we are having a conversation. When they're on those apps, a lot of times it's them just pressing buttons, and they're hearing language,
mm-hmm.
but there is no need for them to reciprocate that. All they're doing is kind of taking that in. And we're not really sure if all of that is getting taken in, or if they're just like, ooh, I really like pressing the buttons and looking at the pictures. Am I getting the language? So I think that there are, you know, it's good in a short amount of time, but there's limitations to what technology and TV can really add as far as language development.
So I know every child's different and there are all sorts of different delays and difficulties, but are there some really common warning signs that you see during the preschool years in kids?
So I think by age 3, two or three. So I'm gonna start 2 and 3, because I know some of the kids that I see in my practice, they're 2-year-old and mom or dad are just now starting to get the assessment because the pediatrician's like, oh, he'll talk when he's ready.
Mm-hmm.
If they haven't said any words by 2, that's a huge red flag. Or if they have a small vocabulary and not putting words together, that also is a red flag. By 3, if they're not putting 3 and 4 words together, if they are still dependent on using gestures, or if they're grabbing and pulling you to go get stuff, and not communicating with peers, that definitely is a red flag to me that, you know, there could be some issues with language development. Also how they're using it with peers. So if they're at daycare and they're not kind of going and talking to other kids, or if they're on the playground and they're kind of on their own and not, you know, they look like they want to talk to a kid, but they're not sure how to go up and say something, that could definitely be a red flag of like, okay, you might need some assistance with your language development.
Right. Let's talk about how parents can kind of distinguish, moving towards the speech area, that kind of articulation development, what's kind of typical, like the walk it versus
yes.
rock it, and things you'll often hear, like, how does a parent know, like, what is more typical and what might be more of a speech impediment, when there are some things that I know all 2 and 3 year olds tend to do?
Absolutely. So there are typical milestones of how children develop certain sounds, as well as what how they produce sounds together. And we have typical phonological processes, like what, you know, what children do to a certain group of sounds and how they produce them. And we expect children to slowly develop sounds over time. So by two, you would expect a child to be able to produce, you know, the letter sounds of P, B, M, D, and T. And then as a three, we add on more sounds. So there'll be F and G and K. And so each year they should be starting to add on more sound development. By six or seven and eight, they should, you know, usually by eight, they should have all of their sounds developed. And so if you have a two-year-old that maybe is, you know, saying tutti for cookie, that's kind of still developmentally appropriate, and that wouldn't be something that we would cause a red flag for. Or let's say you have a three-year-old that can't say their S's, R's, or L's. Those are later developing sounds, so I wouldn't expect a child at three to be able to produce those sounds at this time. And so that's not really something that we would that would show a red flag. Now, as far as understanding, you know, what I usually use as my kind of milestone is, you know, by two, you should understand about 50 to 60% of what a child is saying. By three, you would do about 70. By four to five, you should be understanding about 80 to 90% of what's coming out. So there is going to be times when you're kind of like, huh? You know, and maybe they didn't do all the sounds, or you're needing the context of what they're doing to understand what they said. And that's still very typical. However, if you have, let's say, a four-year-old who is not producing a lot of different sounds and you're getting a lot of different reports from, you know, friends or teachers or other people saying, like, you know, he's saying things, but I really just, I cannot understand anything he's saying. That would be where I think he could warrant a speech eval to just determine, like, okay, is he able to produce the sounds that he should be doing at this age? And can he imitate those sounds? And, you know, or is he really having difficulty doing that? And would he warrant an assessment?
Great. In terms of a child who either puts things in the wrong order or pronounces something incorrectly, what do you advise for parents in terms of correction? Should they correct them or repeat back in a different way? How?
So I think so the one thing that I would always say is model appropriate language, but give them positive reinforcement for what they said. So for example, if they say, you know, Mama, I want a tootie. You can say, okay, you want a cookie? Okay, great. I will give you a cookie. Let's go and have the cookie. Now, you wouldn't necessarily expect them to imitate that right away, or I wouldn't expect a parent to say, okay, now tell me cookie. But as long as you're modeling the right language, because eventually, again, I want them to start to hear it and get modeling from parents, and then eventually be able to kind of, from natural, normal maturation, develop that sounds on their own. So I don't expect, you know, I always tell my family, I don't expect you to go home and be a speech therapist and constantly, you know, correct your children. And that would be really frustrating as a child too, if someone's constantly saying, like, say it like this. But I think as long as you're modeling the correct speech order and sounds, then we hope that by natural development that they'll pick that up on their own.
Right. In addition to that modeling, are there other just general good practices we as parents should be doing to help their speech and language development?
So I think that, you know, baby talk is really great when they're really little. But as they get to two and three, if you want them to see them developing more appropriate speech, then it's really important that you're also modeling that. So when you are using kind of the baby talk And I know it's very cute. Like, I used to do it for my kids. My kids used to say to nono instead of tomorrow, and I just thought it was the cutest thing ever. But my kids were developing normal speech, so it was okay. But if you have a child that maybe is using a lot of those different sounds, that's when it's time to start modeling appropriate speech. If you have a child that's maybe showing some disfluencies, for example, and this is very typical of younger kids where they understand a lot more that they can say. So they have a lot of ideas in their head, but it's really hard from a motor standpoint to get it out. So they may come up to you and be like, Mama, Mama, I did that. And, you know, you're getting nervous because you're like, oh my gosh, are they stuttering? That's very appropriate for them to be doing that. The most important thing for you to do is stay really calm. Give them time to get their thoughts out. Because if you rush them or you interrupt them, that actually is going to make them a little bit more nervous. And then they're going to start to stutter again.
Yeah.
And so it's really important to, you know, stay really calm, give them time. And then once they get it out, again, you model it correctly. Like, oh, okay, you saw your friend today. That's real. I'm really good. Tell me more. And giving them that time to get their thought process together. Because it is, it's a connection between their receptive language and the motor planning for speech. And that takes time to develop. And I don't think it would be atypical to see a 2 or 3 year old that is a little disfluent or not putting sentences together in the right order because they're still trying to get their thought processes organized.
Yeah, I definitely saw that with my kids when they were really excited. Yeah. They were just like, okay, come on, what are you excited about? But they didn't like stutter in other times or just, you know, in those moments when their brain was, you know, really moving at a rate that their mouth just
couldn't. You know, and that's exactly what it is. Yeah. Like, they just are not moving. And my youngest daughter did it all the time. And my husband, who's an accountant and who has absolutely zero idea about child development, would be like, you know, you're a speech therapist. Shouldn't you do something about that? And I'm like, no, because that's, you know, she has a lot to say. She has a lot of language. She just needs time to get it out. So I think, you know, calmness and patience and being really supportive will, in the long run, help them to decrease the chance of them having any disfluencies.
So we have a lot of children at our center who are learning English and often speak one, if not more, languages at home. How does speaking multiple languages impact their speech and language development in English? And, you know, sometimes it can be hard to see if there are issues or, you know, I know it can be different languages have different speech patterns and different orders for things. So
it can be learning more than one language is a wonderful skill to have. But it can be very complicated as children are learning that language because there's a couple of things that they have to figure out. So for one, they are advancing their vocabulary at a different rate than a child who's learning one language. So if you have a child who's just learning English, they're learning water, paper, you know, pen, milk, and that's, you know, that's their language. But let's say for Spanish, now they're learning it's water, but they're also learning it's agua. You know, they're learning milk, and then they're learning leche. And so if a child's, you know, language development for one, let's say for one language, you know, by 3 is 500 words, you might have a child who's learning 2 languages, maybe their vocabulary development's only at 200 words, but they're learning 2 languages at once. So you want to put them on the same kind of plane as you would a child who's learning one language. The thing about learning multiple languages is that what kids need to learn is kind of code switching and understanding when to use what language. So code switching is the idea of I speak, you know, French at home, but I do English at school, and I understand when I can switch between the two languages. And sometimes that takes time. Sometimes it may be from different parents. So, for example, I have some Spanish-speaking families where mom speaks English and dad is speaking Spanish. And so as long as both families are trying to be really consistent in how they're using the language and the modeling, there's definitely no reason why that child would not catch up. Now, as far as the articulation, yes, every single language is going to have some different words that are pronunciation. So, for example, English has a very certain set of sounds. Then when you go to, say, Russian, they have really glottal sounds that we don't have in our language. Or Spanish, you know, they have an R trill that we don't have in our language. So that, over time, becomes a developmental thing that they are eventually going to have to tease out to figure out when do I use what sound. So as far as whether if there's concerns about a language, what I usually look at is, are they stronger in one language than the other? Yeah. So if they're really strong in Spanish but not that strong in English, well, okay, then that just means maybe they just need a little more help in English development. If they are not using in either of the languages at all, so if I have a child that comes in and they're exposed to both, but mom's like, he doesn't respond in English or Spanish, he's not using any one of those languages, then I would be like, okay, we might have a concern. You know, and then what I usually say is, you know, let's test him in the language that we think he would understand the most so we can get a good understanding of, you know, if he hears more Spanish, he should be tested in Spanish first. And so then we would look at that to say, okay, well, where is he with his language development? If they are using a lot more of one language at home and maybe just started a preschool, you know, or just now starting to get exposed to English, I wouldn't expect them to have a lot of English at that point because they're just now learning it.
Yeah.
As long as they're stronger in the language that they hear the most, I don't think that there should be an area of concern.
Yeah.
And then as long as if they are developing both languages, you know, just remember at some point, all that vocabulary development, it will catch up. So once they really start to get the hang of how to use it, how to code switch, I have found most kids to be who are bilingual really get to catch up and then end up having very good reading skills.
And the thing is, they can do that so much better at those early ages. You know, they are capable of learning so many different languages, whereas, you know, here I am, eight years trying to study Spanish as an adult.
Yeah, absolutely. I tried to do it, and I'm still really very basic.
So let's talk about interventions now. If you have some concerns about your child, let's say the school also does, where do you go from there? Like, what steps should you take when you want to get an evaluation?
So the first thing I would do is, because it is what it is, first find out from your insurance company, what do they cover? Mm-hmm. So does your insurance company, you know, cover speech-language analysis and speech-language therapy? And if they do, finding out, okay, based on my insurance, are there certain speech therapists that are in network with my insurance that I can go to use that? Now, if you have a child that you have language concerns about and they're under the age of 3, you can go through the Children's Developmental Service Agency. So what they are is basically a service that helps you find, they do the evaluation, they help you find therapists, and then they offer therapy services at a reduced cost. And they offer the services either in the home or at the daycare. Now, many other speech that, like, so for example, I have my own practice. I also will go do therapy at schools and at patients' house. So it isn't just the CDSA that can offer that, but that also is, you know, one option to go through. If you have a child that's over 3 and you still have some concerns, you know, you're going to go through your insurance company, find out which therapists are in network. You will probably have to call your pediatrician to see if you need to get a referral. And then I would just start, you know, doing some research about, okay, what speech therapists are in the area, looking at the speech therapist, finding out, like, okay, what is her methodology? Mm-hmm. You know, does she have any reviews? And I've definitely done free consultations on the phone with families, so I can, you know, they can talk to them first and feel like they can be comfortable with me, because I have to make a connection not only with the child but with the parent, because the parent has to buy into what I'm doing. So if they're like, ah, I don't know about her, I don't like the way she did that, if they're not going to buy into it, it's not going to be effective. So it's really important for you to have a connection with the person that you're trying to contact. And if you have concerns and you're really on the fence about it, it can't hurt to just do the evaluation to get the information. You know, I've had it go both ways. I've done assessments where I'm like, I think he's fine, you know, off on your way. And then I've had others where, you know, I'm like, hey, I think he's on the borderline. It's up to you. You can go home and try these strategies and then check back in with me in a month or two. Or we can start to do some therapy and then see how quickly he picks it up. And then that leaves it in the parent's court about what they want to do.
Right.
And then they can take control of that.
So why do you think it's so important to start these interventions during the preschool years and not wait till they're like 7 or 8 years old?
So there's a lot of social implications with children when they are not able to develop their speech and language properly. It impacts their ability to adjust and mingle to peers as well as to other adults. It's actually going to impact day-to-day life too, as far as with you, because if they cannot tell you what they want, you know, their initial reaction is going to be to yell and scream and throw tantrums, because they are 2 or they're 3 and they don't know how else to tell you, and you're not able to kind of read their mind and tell you what they need. So if they can't tell you and you can't figure it out, you know, chaos ensues, the kids throw themselves on the floor, they're crying. And so it can actually help you in the long run, just getting through the day-to-day of lessening tantrums because of communication frustration. It will help with their ability to make social connections with friends, because if they can't communicate with other kids, you know, adults are we're very patient people. So if we walk up to a little kid and they're not talking as much, you know, we stand there and we wait because they're so cute and we're like, that's okay. You know, we give them time, but other 3-year-olds or other peers, they are very impatient. So if you can't get an immediate reaction or if they can't talk, then those kids will tend up walking away. And so then that becomes socially, can be a little isolating for kids, because they pick up like, oh, you know, I don't know how to go up. I want to go up and talk to that kid, but I don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
It also, you know, I'm a really big proponent of early intervention. I feel very strongly that if we work on speech and language development at an early age, we are going to really help them as they get through the elementary school years, because we don't want to have to get kids to have pulled out of classes and lose academic time because of speech language issues that could have been addressed when they were younger. I've had many kids where when I have worked with speech and language skills, it has actually helped them with their reading and in long term, because you're working on phonics, you know, you're working on phoneme development. So if it is very, so if you start that early, I think you will start to give them a good foundation for language learning later on. And it just in general will help with how to help them communicate in their environment when they're not with you. You know, as parents, we anticipate all of our children's needs. So, but at some point, you know, we let our little flowers go. We, you know, we let them out into the world and we want to make sure like, okay, well, when they're not with me, can they communicate what they need? Can they tell me what's happening? Yeah. And it's not just even daycare, like leaving them with a babysitter, you know, or doing a drop off daycare. Like you want to be able to make sure that they can tell you things.
Yeah.
And so that's really, really important skills for them to have.
Yeah, no, I think those are all really great points. You know, how you mentioned the social aspects that's impacted the academics and the daily life. You know, it's talk about communication with children and toddlers and how difficult it is to begin with. And
yes.
Never mind if you can't really understand what they're trying to communicate,
yep.
You're adding a whole nother
level.
Layer, yeah, and it becomes so much more difficult. So, and then all the problems that can result from that when they feel that they're not being heard, that their needs aren't being met because they can't express them in the way that they want to. I think you definitely want to, if you can get assistance with those, I definitely think early intervention is the way to go.
Absolutely.
It's so much easier to address these things now than it is. You know, I've talked on the show, I've taught middle school and high school, and it's much harder to...
Absolutely. And you know, I worked in the school systems for years. And, you know, I can tell you that when the kids are in kindergarten or when they're younger and you're pulling them out for speech, everybody thinks it's really cute. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, I get to go to speech. It's so fun. And
yeah.
They walk down the hallway with that little speech folder.
Uh-huh.
When they're in fifth and sixth grade, they hate it.
Yeah.
Because now kids are like, you're in speech therapy. You know, so it's like a social stigma and they don't enjoy it anymore. And then they're not really invested in it at
mm-hmm.
that point because they're just really frustrated that they still have to go.
Yeah.
So I think the earlier that you can get things worked on taking care of, you're going to actually set your kids up for a lot more success when they're older.
So in terms of speech therapy and preschoolers, can you give us a little idea what that looks like and kind of what sort of things you might do with them?
So it's so at this age, it's extremely play-based. So it does look a lot like play, but I have a purpose behind my play. So so for younger two-year-olds, if it's language or even if it's speech articulation, so if I'm doing it in the home, I try to use a lot of the toys that the kids have in the house. However, I always come in with my big bag of toys because they're around their toys all the time. So sometimes you need like something
right.
really new and shiny
yeah.
to come in. And I have specific toys that I use that I feel like helps to generate some language. So I will usually bring that in. We do a lot of play-based. I do a lot of sitting at the same level of the child. So I'm sitting on the floor with them because I want them being able to make really easy eye contact with me. So I'm not talking over them. I'm talking with them. And I manipulate my environment. So for example, let's say I'm going to do a puzzle. You know, I might sit on the floor with the puzzle and I might give them one piece. And then that's opening up a communication opportunity. So it could be like, okay, well, do you want another piece of puzzle? Okay, can you ask me for more? Can you say truck? And so instead, we're setting up a communication temptation. I see that a lot with families at home where what kids will sometimes do is they're like, ah. And, you know, they're reaching for something, so they're holding their arm up, and they're like, ah. And then mom's like, okay, you want a drink? You want juice? Okay, let me get you some juice. So as a mom, you love your kid. You anticipated their needs. You got them the cup of juice. From a communication standpoint, you just missed a communication opportunity because what that kid figured out was like, oh, I just reached my arm up and I grunted and I got what I
right.
wanted. And so some of the things that I do with therapy is trying to teach parents like, okay, that's an opportunity for you to try to model him, like give him a choice of two, you know, or use sign language, you know, like have him point to his chest and say me or more. And that is increasing his ability to understand. I have to physically do something to get something. So I either have to use a word or a sign to get something. I can't just pull or gesture or just grab it. I have to do something purposeful to get what I need. And so that's kind of what therapy looks like. For older kids, if I'm doing articulation, it's more kind of like sitting at a table with some games and doing a lot of drill work and getting them to, you know, I use a mirror and look at their mouth and see where they're producing the sounds and try to teach them like, okay, you know, you have to keep your teeth closed to do a s, and you know, and then I give parents a lot of handouts, and or at least that's how I do my therapies. I give a lot of parents like handouts and kind of what we call speech homework each week. Like, hey, try to do this like 5 or 10 minutes a day with them. Or if you can talk to the, you know, preschool to just remind them to do these things, because it really, you know, if you're only going to work on it 30 minutes a week, it's going to take much longer. If you can get everybody involved with it, it's going to go so much quicker.
Yeah, I was going to ask in terms of timelines, if it's going to obviously vary depending on what's going on with the child, but is this something that parents should anticipate, you know, being multi-year thing or, you know, 4 to 6 months?
So it all depends on how severe it is. So I can tell you that I have, so if we were just talking about speech, like just say articulation,
right.
so language is fine, just how they're producing the sounds. Mm-hmm. I would say that a severe case could take, you know, depending on how much you're practicing, could take a year to a year and a half of therapy, sometimes two. It just depends on how many sounds that they're not producing correctly. If it's like one or two sounds, it shouldn't take that long. And, you know, if you're doing the practice at home and you're following through and they're able to follow directions, a couple months. Language, you know, that all depends on how quickly are they picking it up? What are the language needs? Are there behavior concerns? So, you know, if every time you're trying to get the kid to say something, he's throwing himself on the floor and there's a lot of behavior problems, that's certainly going to
slow it down a little bit. Yeah.
That's going to slow it down a little bit versus the kid who's like, yeah, I'm going to sit on the floor. Yeah. I'll imitate truck. And so then that's going to make it go quicker. So it, you know, it can go either way. I've had language kids where I've had them on for like 4 months and then they did really well. And I'm like, okay, we're going to send you on their way. And I've had some kids where it's been 8 or 9 months and we're still kind of working on stuff, but it's getting better. And maybe, and then sometimes I try to take the ownership back to the parents. I'm like, okay, we're going to start going every other week now. So now you have the tools. I want to see if you can use them.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's not so much like he only does it for you in the therapy room, because if he's only doing it for me, then the therapy's not working.
Right.
He has to be doing it in all of his environments.
Mm-hmm. Great. And so Jill, if someone's interested in either consulting with you, visiting your office, what's the best way to get in touch?
So I have two locations. We have a location in Raleigh on Six Forks Road with my associate Morgan. And then my location is in Holly Springs across from Holly Springs Elementary School. My website is www.hsfeedingandspeech.com. You can also just Google Holly Springs Feeding and Speech. I have a Facebook page. And if you're just interested in a consult or you just have questions, you can call either one of us at any time. We'd be happy to just talk to you on the phone and see if there is something that is, if what your concerns are actually warrant an assessment or maybe just some suggestions of what you need to do at home.
Great. And we'll link to all that in our show notes page.
Thank you.
Great. And that brings us to the final portion of our show, the show and tell segment, where our guests will share either a recommendation, extra tip, piece of advice. So do you have a show and tell for us today, Jill?
I think my show and tell would be kind of what I talked about before is, you know, making sure you're providing communication opportunities. So offer your child a choice of two things. So if they want something to drink, you know, you can say, even if you know they want juice, you know, offer them, show them milk and juice and be like, okay, do you want milk or juice? Okay, tell me, say, I want juice. Really sitting on the floor and doing some appropriate play with them. I, as a parent, forget to do this. Sometimes we get so busy in our life. So we get our kids, we pick them up, we make dinner, we're cleaning up, we're doing all these stuff. And I have to sometimes remind myself, like, did I really sit and hang out with my kids today?
Yeah.
So, you know, taking like 30 minutes, you know, however much you can in the day, you know, turning off the TV, you know, taking away the tablet and the phone and just sitting down and playing with your kids. That one-on-one, that direct language connection is key. Also reading to your kids. I'm very old school in my language in that I think reading is such a huge key. Sitting down and have really good quiet time with reading, getting your, let your kids pick the book. Use just a picture book, even if they're not ready to do, you know, read books with words. Do a picture book and be like, oh, look what I see. You know, I see this elephant. He's going to climb over that. That helps to develop language. So I think some down one-on-one time is really important. So that children feel really connected and then there's not a lot of distractions from the outside world. So, you know, if you're just sitting down playing with them one-on-one and the TV's not on and the phone's not around and you know, it's just you and them, you might end up seeing that they can actually do a little more than you actually thought.
Yeah, that's great advice. I think it's great for their language development, all their verbal skills, and also just that relationship building, which is just so key in so many different areas we've talked about on here. So definitely recommend that piece of advice. Well, thank you so much for coming in today, Jill, and joining us. This was really great. I learned a lot today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed doing this, and I really enjoyed talking about speech and language skills. It is something I'm very passionate about.
Well, thanks again. You can find links to what we talked about today on our show notes page, www.discoverychilddevelopmentcenter.com/podcast. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/preschoolandbeyond. We thank you all for listening today, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks.